Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
The Big Waltz from Masquerade by Kachaturian, and reminiscent of so many from this era, from Kurt Weill to Shostakovich. Now, Masquerade was written in 1941 as incidental music for the play of the same name by Russian poet and playwright Mikhail Lermontov. And Kachaturian later told of the great trouble he had in writing this waltz, moved by the words of the play's heroine, Nina, who says, "How beautiful the new waltz is." And he said, where something between sorrow and joy gripped my heart as I struggled to find a theme that I considered both beautiful and new. But so pleased was he with the final result that he felt enabled to dedicate the waltz to the actress playing the part, Alla Kazanskaya, who went on to act until her death at the age of 88 in 2008. Rather like Russia's answer to Dame Judi Dench, though whereas Judi Dench sorted herself out nicely with running the MI6 in the Bond franchises, Alla Kazanskaya was less fortunate with the very, well, much less amenable and entertaining KGB. Which brings me, curiously enough, to Modeste Mazursky's The Great Gate of Kiev from his pictures at an exhibition, a suite of 10 piano pieces that he wrote in 1874, inspired by and based upon a series of drawings and watercolours by his friend, architect and artist Victor Hartmann. Incidentally, performed more frequently these days in orchestral performances. A 1922 adaptation by Maurice Ravel being the most popular. And furthermore, only 6 of the drawings have survived, or perhaps the others never existed. We don't know. Concert notes will tell us very grandly that the theme of being led or progressing through a gallery of pictures, starting with 2 promenade movements through an old Italian castle, the old Tuileries Palace in Paris, onward through a bucolic scene in Poland, a ballet of unhatched chickens, the catacombs of Rome, so on and so forth, until the theme reaches its spectacular apotheosis in the grand finale with the Bogatyr Gates of Kiev, of course. Valery Gergiev conducts the Vienna Philharmonic in what we now call the Great Gates of Kiev, the Bogatyr Gates. Vienna Philharmonic playing Mussorgsky's The Great Gates of Kiev. An exciting piece of music. And now that we've heard it, I shall sadly pronounce that these gates were never actually built. Victor Hartmann had won a competition for the construction of new city gates at Kiev. His designs were very much in the ancient Russian massive style, with a cupola shaped like a giant Slavonic helmet. But rather disappointingly, construction was cancelled a few years later. Perhaps the plans were overambitious? I don't know. Certainly, judging by the music, I suspect they might have been. Now, at home, actually, I have a fabulous recording of the young Russian pianist Evgeny Kisin playing the Great Gates of Kiev, which is to be played another day, time and place. He looks rather like Donny Osmond. Donny Osmond for the thinking man or woman, although actually, having just seen a recent photograph, I'm reminded more of Ernest Borgnine. He's aging rather rapidly, who was, without doubt, a very fine actor anyway. Now, since 2002, Kisin has been a British citizen, as well as an Israeli citizen, since 2014. In fact, anyone with as much talent as he can be a citizen, I suppose, of anywhere they choose. He made his debut at the age of 10, performing Mozart's 20th piano concerto. But today, I want us to listen to this extraordinary, powerful performance of the fugue from Johann Sebastian Bach, Toccata, Adagio and Fugue in C, the BWV 564. It's a four-voice fugue written originally for organ in approximately 1720. Thank you. it's appropriate today to consider Radu Lupu for a moment, one of the most outstanding pianists of recent times. It was overwhelmingly sad to hear of his death in Lausanne recently, on the 17th of April, actually, at the age of 76. Romanian-born Radu Lupu, winner of the 1969 Leeds International Piano Competition, among others, was without doubt one of the greatest exponents of Schubert and Brahms. The absolute antithesis of Glenn Gould, who ended up locked in his recording studios for the last 20 years of his life, Radu Lupu much preferred performing live in the concert hall, considering spontaneous communication with the audience to be the greatest feature of any performance, and therefore making every performance unique, which, of course, does not detract from any of his recordings. And whereas Gould had his famous creaking piano stool, made personally of freshly hewn Canadian timber by his Presbyterian father, Radu Lupu preferred to be seated upon an upright chair, a dining chair, in fact, stating that when sitting on a piano stool, he tended to lean forward, raise his shoulders, becoming impossibly stiff, and developed pains all over. He practiced on a chair and therefore brought it with him. So let us listen to him play Brahms's Rhapsody in G minor, which was written during the summer of 1879.
Thank you.
late Radu Lupu playing Brahms' Rhapsody in G minor. Now, another great favourite Schubertian performer of mine, and still alive, but very much Radu Lupu's contemporary, 6 years older to be precise, is mezzo-soprano Bridget Fassbender, some of whose recordings I have been playing recently. Well, here's another wonderful composition, Ständchen zugend leise, which she sings with Erich Werber and his Frauenchor. Schubert wrote two versions in quick succession in July 1827, when he was commissioned by singing teacher Anna Fröhlich to set a poem by the Viennese playwright Franz Grillparzer to music for an alto or mezzo-soprano voice to celebrate the birthday of her favourite pupil Louise Gosmar, which he did, but accompanied by male voices and piano. And unfortunately, Fräulein Fröhlich was most unhappy about this arrangement, insisting that he rewrite it for female voice accompaniment, a request that he obligingly but tersely dealt with. And failing to turn up at the public performance, it was found to be necessary to drag him reluctantly out of the local beer keller in order to attend the event. Zugend leise. In English, the song goes softly, hesitantly, cloaked in night's darkness. We have come here, and with fingers gently curled softly, we knock on the beloved's bedroom door. I can see why Fräulein Fröhlich was so concerned that her young protege, Louise Gosmar, was heard to sing the song accompanied by female rather than male voices. My initial instinct was to play Schubert's first version out of male solidarity, if nothing else. But having listened carefully to the two versions for the duration of 3 cups of tea and a packet of digestives, I have decided the second female-accompanied version to be more, well, how can I put it, elating, elevating, exalting, exhilarating? It certainly sounds more of an adventure. An adventure that seems neither to threaten or compromise the virtue and innocence of the young lady knocking on her beloved's bedroom door, whereas with a male accompaniment, not only does an element of doubt come into the singer's virtuous intentions, but the somewhat affected, fluted and nasal tones of the Bavarian tenors lend a rather alarmingly sinister atmosphere to the nocturnal setting. Or there's certainly no denying there's a certain urgency in her voice.
Zwing und leise, in des Dunkels Nächte still.
Thank you.
Such pronounced virtue signalling outside a fellow's bedroom door might well have raised a few eyebrows in the early 18th century in Vienna, even in the bohemian sector. But it certainly wouldn't have fooled Don Giovanni. Mozart's version of Don Juan, the Andalusian libertine who first entered the world of European literature on theatre in Tirso de Molina's play El Burlador de Sevilla y Convidado de Piedra, which would translate as The Trickster of Seville and the Stone Guest, which was written and produced in 1630. Don Juan is portrayed as a wicked Lothario with an awe-inspiring talent for seducing women. There is a clear moralizing intention, however. Tirso felt that the Catholic Church encouraged too many young people to throw away or abuse their lives by perpetuating the belief that providing they made an act of contrition before they died, they would automatically receive God's forgiveness, providing one is in full control of one's own mortality, of course. As it turns out, Don Juan, or Don Giovanni, finds he has left it rather too late, and he is dragged down to the fiery pits of hell. However, there are some amusing bits before he meets his terrible fate, such as the famous catalogue aria. Don Giovanni's manservant, Leporello, gives an itemized account of his master's conquests to an outraged Elvira. Madamina, il catalogo e questo. Italian bass, Ferruccio Folanetto sings, and it will be followed immediately and just for fun by Michael Nyman's In Re Don Giovanni, the first work he wrote for Michael Nyman Band in 1977, which is based upon the first 15 bars and used later in his one-act television opera Letters, Riddles and Writs, broadcast on the BBC in 1991.
Delle belle chiamò il padron mio, un catalogo è che ho fatto io. Osservate, leggete con me, osservate, leggete con me. In Italia 640, in Lamagna 231, Francia, in Turchia 91, ma in Spagna, mai in Spagna, sono già 1003, 1003, 1003. Ma tra queste contadine, cameriere cittadine, a contesse baronesse, marchesani, principessi, i bandoni, doni, cani, doni, formatoni, doni, doni, in Italia 640, in Lamagna 231, 100 in Francia, in Turchia 91, ma
passione predominante e la gioventù in
principiante. Non si dica se sia ricca, se sia brutta, se sia bella, se sia ricca, brutta, se sia bella. Purché porti la gonnella, voi sapete la gonnella, voi sapete quel che fa, voi sapete, voi sapete quel che fa.
And now, let us move on to Jacques Offenbach's final opera, The Tales from Hoffmann, which was first produced on stage in 1880, 4 months after poor old Hoffmann died. And he died, incidentally, during rehearsals with the script in his hand. Now, the first act is based upon a short story by Hoffmann called The Sandman, in which Hoffmann has unwittingly fallen in love with a mechanical doll called Olympia, created by the unscrupulous scientist Spallanzani, and his equally devious accomplice Coppelius, who has sold Hoffmann a pair of magic spectacles to make Olympia appear as a real woman. And an improbable tale, I know. And Olympia sings, Les oiseaux dans la chamille, the birds in the arbour. And whilst singing, she runs down and needs to be wound up. But Hoffman sees only love through his magic spectacles. Fortunately for Hoffman, as he dances with the clockwork Olympia, he falls and breaks his spectacles. Whilst Coppelius and Spallanzani fall out and Olympia is destroyed, and of course Hoffman is publicly ridiculed. Here we listen to the most wonderful, wonderful recording of Joan Sutherland playing and singing the Automaton.
Thank you. commence. Quand je dis au secours, comment tu vas me faire mourir?
Voilà la chanson.
Sutherland singing Les Oiseaux dans la Chamille from The Tales of Hoffmann. Wonderful recording. And, well, there you have it. And what better way, because I'm looking at my watch, what better way than to see you off with the scherzo from Schubert's Piano Sonata in B flat, played again by Radu Lupu himself. How lucky we are to have his recordings. So sit back and enjoy Radu Lupu play, as I said, the scherzo from Schubert's Piano Sonata in B flat. And I will say goodbye and until next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.